This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. Police are investigating claims that bombs were placed in downtown Dallas following a sniper attack last night. Three suspects are in custody and a fourth is dead following a sniper-like attack targeting police officers during a protest in Dallas. President Obama reacted to the shootings this morning from the NATO summit in Warsaw. We will talk about the shootings and the response in this edition of The Week in Review. We will welcome in two guests from different perspectives, and we will welcome your questions and your responses, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. The protest last night in Dallas was a peaceful one until the shots rang out. The demonstrators were protesting the fatal shootings of two black men by white police officers in Louisiana and Minnesota earlier this week. Let me welcome our guests. Very happy to have with us Steve Prestigard, a journalist and blogger at steveprestigard.com. Good morning.
Good morning. It's a beautiful morning, and I hope that the program will not be interrupted by all of the street construction that's going on behind our house. I was hearing banging noises a few minutes ago, so...
So far, so good, Steve. We do not hear any construction noise. That usually is the case around here, too. Tony Palmieri is also with us, communications professor at UW Oshkosh and media columnist for the Fox Valley Scene. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Steve. Glad to be here.
Well, we have lots to talk about. We will begin with the news out of Dallas. Five police officers were killed. Six others were wounded last night by snipers, according to the Dallas police chief, during protests over the deadly police shootings of black men this week in Louisiana and Minnesota. Three suspects are in custody. A fourth has died, reportedly when officials detonated a bomb after exchanging gunfire with police in a parking garage. The police chief said the suspects planned to injure and kill as many police officers as they could. It was the deadliest day for law enforcement since the 9/11 attacks, and it occurred just a few blocks from where President John F. Kennedy was assassinated by a sniper in 1963. Let's take a listen to what President Obama had to say about the Dallas police officer deaths.
We still don't know all the facts. What we do know is that there has been a vicious, calculated, and despicable attack on law enforcement. Police in Dallas were on duty during doing their jobs, keeping people safe during peaceful protests. These law enforcement officers were targeted.
So, Steve Prestigard, first, your reaction to what happened last night.
Well, it's horrifying. And, you know, you feel for the people who were there to peacefully protest what's been going on in, and apparently there was a new shooting last night, I guess, in Fresno, California, if I saw correctly, online. But, you know, here they're protesting as they have the right to under our First Amendment. And then all of a sudden others, and it obviously is not just one person. It may not, they may not even have gotten everybody who's involved in it, start to shooting police officers. And, you know, the people who don't have a side in this, you know, are probably the ones who are going to say, well, see what happens when you, you know, are permissive. Now all of a sudden somebody's trying to, you know, murder police officers. It's unfortunate that the issues that this, that what happened in Minnesota and Louisiana and other places before that have brought up, that's all going to get obscured as a result of, as a result of what happened yesterday or last night. And, you know, if it happened somewhere else, I can't believe it. These people in Dallas are the only people who thought that the correct way to deal with their problems is with police is to kill them. I cannot, you know, I cover police, and I have family who's in law enforcement, and I've been on ride-alongs with police, but I cannot really imagine what it must be like putting the uniform on today given what happened in Dallas last night.
Yeah. Tony Palmieri?
Just an awful and terrible event by all indications. The police were doing their job in the best sense, protecting the right of people to protest, and targeted, and as the president said, in a vicious, calculated, despicable act. What I would hope is that elements of the media and some officials resist the temptation to respond in a hysterical manner, because I think that that's what individuals who perpetrate these kind of acts want. So we need to find out what the facts are, what led to this, but just a dreadful act.
Yeah. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. If you have a question or a reaction or a response that you would like to share about the sniper shootings of police officers in Dallas last night, we need to hear from you soon, as we will continue to move along to other top stories in the news this week. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's also talk about the shootings in Louisiana and Minnesota. The U.S. Justice Department is investigating the shooting of Alton Sterling, a black man, by two white Baton Rouge police officers. In a cell phone video taken by a community activist and posted online, the officers pinned Sterling to the ground. Someone yelled, "He's got a gun," and then we hear gunshots. The police chief says Sterling was armed, but questions still remain about exactly what happened. Two officers are on administrative leave, those two officers in Louisiana. Meanwhile, Minnesota Governor Mark Dayton is urging federal investigators to look into the shooting of Philando Castile, a black man who was shot Wednesday night in a car in the suburb of Falcon Heights. A police officer said that the incident began when an officer initiated a traffic stop. A woman in the car, who identified herself as Castile's girlfriend, live streamed the aftermath in a widely shared Facebook video. President Obama said he was deeply disturbed over both shootings, and indeed said all Americans should be deeply disturbed, but didn't comment a lot further until the investigations are complete. Tony Palmieri, what went through your mind when you heard about these two incidents?
That unfortunately they were part of what seems to have been or be a very, very disturbing pattern in America. Everyone agrees that the overwhelming majority of police do their job ethically and in a very, very good way, but we have too many of these types of acts. I mean, we could look at it this way. The shooting of the police officers last night, everyone is horrified by it. The people who killed the officers acted as judge, jury, and executioner. That's a terrible thing. But we've seen that same kind of pattern playing out in the killings of people like Castile and Sterling, where the video makes very clear that these killings did not have to take place. Since Ferguson, Missouri is about 2 years ago now, and since then we've seen over 2,400 citizens killed by police. We don't know the facts of all those situations. We don't know how many of them were justified, how many were not. But it seems like a very, very high amount of them meet what we saw in those videos, and that's just not tolerable.
Yeah. Steve, your thoughts?
Well, I've not watched the videos because, for the most part, you can't necessarily see everything that takes place when somebody picks up a video camera and starts taking video. And we've seen that in some of the police shootings, that what was purported to have taken place really wasn't. But that really gets past the issue, which is, Tony's absolutely right. The vast majority of police officers do their jobs ethically, do their jobs thoughtfully, and every one of them now looks worse because of what, you know, police officers who didn't do their jobs or, you know, got frightened in this, in, you know, a particular case or something like that. I think if we're going to talk about all of this, we need to talk about the role, for one thing. You know, there are, one of the things that I know that has been discussed in all of this is a disconnect between the police and the people that they're supposed to serve. Well, that's pretty easy to happen in a big city. That is less easy to happen in a smaller community, and I don't think Baton Rouge and the suburb in Minnesota count in this. But in a place like where I have, you know, places where I have lived, partly for professional reasons and partly for personal reasons, I know all of the police officers. You know, one of them where I live was my daughter's softball coach. You see them in church. A retired police officer did a concert where I live last night because he's a guitar player. And the more that you have actual interactions with police that are not official interactions, the less the disconnect is going to take place. That's one of the things I think that needs to be talked about. The other thing I think personally needs to be talked about also is, why is it that we have all of these laws, police officers get blamed for enforcing because they're supposed to enforce them. You know, last night there was a stop, or I should say the Minnesota case, if I'm correct about this, was about a broken taillight on a car. There are other instances, the shooting in New York City, I believe, was over, which was right after Ferguson, the shooting in New York City, I believe, was over untaxed cigarettes.
I need to jump in because we have a break coming up, and we will take calls, and we will share some more reaction from listeners as the Week in Review continues. If you'd like to join us, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Week in Review on the Ideas Network. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with Steve Prestigard, a journalist and blogger at steveprestigard.com, and Tony Palmieri, a communications professor at UW-Oshkosh and media columnist for the Fox Valley Scene, talking about top stories in the news this week, talking now about the various police shootings. Minnesota Governor Mark Dayton said in no uncertain terms that Philando Castile ended up dead during a traffic stop, at least in part because he was black. He said, would this have happened if those passengers, the driver and the passengers, were white? I don't think it would have, Dayton said. I think all of us in Minnesota are forced to confront that this kind of racism exists. Steve, I'm sorry I interrupted you to go to break, but what's your reaction to that?
I don't know that that was a really very helpful statement to make. And, you know, I think generally speaking, almost all the time, when politicians speak in instances like that, they're speaking when they really shouldn't. Remember President Obama said on earlier today that we don't know all the facts. Well, you know what? Governor Dayton doesn't know all the facts, and the governor of Louisiana doesn't know all the facts either. And he should have stuck to that and left it at that.
Mm-hmm. Tony Palmieri?
Oh, I disagree. I think the Governor Dayton was right on point here. Sadly, it's a sad thing that there exists racism in police departments. I mean, the investigation of the Ferguson, Missouri case made that very clear a couple of years ago. In fact, I think what Governor Dayton did was a rare example of a governor trying to get on top of the issue and acknowledge what does. It's disturbing, but it does seem to be pretty obvious that there is a high amount of racism in police departments across America. We've agreed. Obviously, it's not all cops. But we have enough disturbing evidence of this that something needs to be done. I think that Steve, before the break, was right on target also, that it's we really need to have build relationships in communities between police and citizens of that community. I think what we need, for example, are what I might call and what has been called citizen review boards. I mean, most cities in America do not have this, boards where people can go to talk about the behavior of police in their community. If something like that is set up, I think you'd see less of these types of events. I mean, they help to give the citizens a voice to talk about police action and their behavior and address issues, you know, before they reach a crisis stage.
Let's take some calls. Sheree in Waupun is with us first. Hi, Sheree.
Good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call. Number one, I definitely want to express my sympathy and condolences to the police officers and their families and what happened in Dallas. That was unnecessary. It was a gruesome act. It was not helpful to Black Lives Matter. It wasn't helpful to anyone. The flip side is, as a Black woman, I have to say that I understand the frustration that happens in this type of circumstance. You know, when you run into police officers constantly in your daily life, where wearing your skin is just considered a threat, you can't imagine the pressure that takes place with every police interaction that a person of color has. And it's hard to explain it when you're not with someone who doesn't have this. And I think that's really where the disconnection takes place. It's amazing that we're able to watch these things in real time now. We're all witnesses to this. And as someone who has worked with the police chief in Beaver Dam, who has helped him walk in our Black communities there in order to build bridges, it's something that works. But it's almost like Black men feel like they're being hunted. You know, when they hunt year-round, it isn't just about going out and shooting one time. Hunters track their prey. They know their habits. And that's what it feels like is happening to our Black men. When they can't go to the store without being stopped and asked why, without there being just a constant reason to interact with our Black men, it feels like they're being hunted.
Sheree,
and I'm sorry that nobody wants to talk about this. It's so shameful that there's nothing coming out of Congress to address this issue. We're all witnesses, and to act like it doesn't exist is detrimental to my son.
Thank you, Sheree. Steve, what do you say to Sheree?
I used to live in Beaver Dam, one of my numerous stops in this state, and I was familiar with the police and had one of the weirdest incidents I ever had to cover there, which is a totally separate topic. I guess my question is, and I'm not referring now to, you know, like Milwaukee or Chicago or Madison or, you know, a big city. But police officers are trained to look at things that don't look right. And I wonder if what the caller is talking about is less about skin color than about I don't know who you are. When you know people, and it gets back to what I was referring to before, about, you know, the disconnect between police and their communities. When you know people, it's like, oh yeah, hi, you know, because there's, you know, you've seen them someplace else. And, I'm not saying racism doesn't exist, but I kind of wonder if that's what it is and what she's talking about. And again, not in big cities, but in communities the size of Beaver Dam and, you know, which make up a whole lot more communities in this state than Madison, Milwaukee do, that it's an issue of wrong skin color or if it's an issue of somebody that I as a police officer don't recognize and I wonder who you are.
Do you think that's the case, Tony?
Sheree, I think, gave a very eloquent statement of really what the Black Lives Matter movement is about, trying to get at some of these deeply disturbing issues of people being, to use her word, hunted. And to kind of relate it to Steve's comments, yeah, police are trained to investigate what doesn't seem right. The problem is just having black skin is enough, it seems, to get that label of something's not right. It doesn't have to be more than that, as Sheree was saying. right? Being approached, being asked questions about why you're walking down the street just because you're black, that could be the only criteria. The President Obama did have a commission that came out with some recommendations that apparently have not really been put into practice in enough communities, but they are about the relationship building. I do think that the president should go further than that. I think we need some kind of modern day Kerner type commission to get at some of the deeper roots of what's going on here. In other words, it's not just about better policing, although that is a big, big part of it. It's about some deeper socioeconomic, political, et cetera, factors going on that I think a 21st century Kerner commission might be able to get at.
How about that, Steve?
My prediction is that is not going to happen. And the reason it is not going to happen is because, despite what has happened over the last couple of years, most people do support the police because I think our society has become increasingly afraid of things in excessive proportion to their actual danger. And you can name any, Tully probably feels that that's the case about, the concern about Muslim terrorism. In this particular case, I think even though the statistics say otherwise, that crime is going down and violent crime is going down, fear of crime is going up. If you ask people, and there's no alternative to the police in terms of enforcing law and order. And I think people realize that if there are strictures put on the police as a result of, what's happened over the last couple of years, you know who's going to be hurt the worst? Poor people, because they don't have the money necessarily to, go buy alarm systems for their house. They don't have the money to buy private security. And the other thing is they don't have the ability to leave the neighborhoods they're in. So if you need to fix what the problems are, but if you say, I saw an utterly stupid suggestion that the police need to be disarmed, take their guns away. Well, the people who are really going to suffer from that are people who rely on the police to keep their stuff and their person secure because they don't have alternatives.
Let me take another call from Cindy in Burlington. Hello, Cindy.
Hi, good morning. Perfect segue when it comes to fear. If you look at these videos and you watch all these cops, and as quickly as they shoot, he shot them four times in the car because that cop was afraid. We need to get these cops that are afraid of their job and afraid of people off the force. It's exactly what happened with Minnesota. The cop was afraid. He was afraid of what's going to happen. He knew that there was a gun in the car. Instead of asking him for a license, he should have just taken him out of the car. And then the gun was still in the car. Separate the situation. But no, he reacted so quickly because he was afraid. He's afraid of a black man, just like we're supposed to be afraid of Muslims. We shouldn't be afraid. There should be change in the cop system and who you hire, because all these situations basically are because these cops are afraid and they act too quickly.
Thank you, Cindy. Tony, what do you say about that?
I think an investigation by the Department of Justice will show, hopefully, what the officer's motives were, what he thought he was doing. But, to get back to something that Steve said and kind of related to Cindy here, we saw in Ferguson, Missouri, when the Department of Justice went in, that a lot of the arrests were because the Ferguson Police Department was under pressure to, collect as much money as they could in, say, fines. In other words, what a lot of Americans would call trivial type of police stops. We don't know if that was the case in the Twin Cities or anywhere else, but I do think that a deeper national investigation would find how many police departments are under pressure to stop vehicles and make other types of stops for offenses that the majority of Americans would call trivial, because police departments are under pressure to literally collect money for city budgets, to write out citations and what have you. I think all of these types of factors play into the kind of violence that we're seeing.
Mm-hmm. And Steve will wrap up with you.
Well, I think there's something to be said about that. That was, to me, the most outrageous thing about the Ferguson investigation, that the police were kind of assigned to or that people in Ferguson were kind of seen as ATMs. And, you know, I go back to the New York situation, untaxed cigarettes, speeding for, you know, speed limits that are set too low. Obviously, you could have a great show probably about whether or not certain drug offenses should be drug offenses. And, you know, and unfortunately, I don't think any of that is really going to take place because of the how people see what the police's role is versus what they think is a dangerous world full of bad people.
Yeah. We need to move on to many other topics in the news this week. Again, On Point, we'll have more on this developing story from Dallas coming up after 9 o'clock. I'm Joy Cardine. This is The Week in Review, where we talk with two guests from different perspectives about all of the top stories in the news each week. Our guests today are Steve Prestigard, a journalist and blogger, and Tony Palmieri, a communications professor at UW Oshkosh and a media columnist for the Fox Valley Scene. We'll move on now to politics. Hillary Clinton will not be charged for her use of a private email server while Secretary of State. FBI Director James Comey announced on Tuesday that he would not recommend charges because he says there's no proof of intent, but he did say that she was extremely careless. Comey also said that he would not rule out the possibility that her server had been hacked. So, Steve, we'll start with you. I take it you disagree with Comey's decision to not recommend charges against Clinton?
I'm hardly surprised, but I think it's ridiculous. I think that it is perfectly obvious, and there are instances of this, General David Petraeus, for instance, where a fraction of what Hillary Clinton did would get you minimum fired, and more like, and you know, almost as likely prosecuted. There was a thing that I read, actually, and I don't remember who wrote it, but a person who started his opinion by saying that he was a supporter of Hillary Clinton, and that he had endorsed Hillary Clinton, and then he went on to say that her lack of indictment was evidence that the law doesn't work equally for everybody. This is it demonstrates that, you know, if you're not cynical about politics, you're not paying attention, and there is no such thing as being cynical enough about politics. And I guess the last prediction I would make about all of this is that despite the fact that she endangered national security, her voters aren't going to care a bit about that because that doesn't seem to be a really important issue. I think, however, that when you have the Russians and the Chinese, who apparently have access, you know, have the emails, that's a perfect blackmail situation for a future foreign affairs conflict between this country and Russia or China. So that is what you are voting for when you vote for Hillary Clinton in four months.
Well, your response to that, Tony, and your thoughts on the FBI not recommending charges, but saying she was extremely careless.
In the heat of a presidential campaign, having the director of the FBI come out and say you're extremely careless with classified information is almost as bad as an indictment. So this is not good for Hillary Clinton. There's no one out there who could say that this is a good thing. However, she's lucky in the fact that the Republicans, as typical, overreached. And yesterday, having Comey before a congressional committee, which I thought was a pointless hearing, but I think that ended up helping Hillary Clinton. Director Comey was asked directly about the Petraeus comparison, and he said that in the Petraeus case, that was a clear violation of the classification protocol with clear intent on Petraeus's part to violate the classification rules, you know, giving classified documents to his mistress and biographer, who's the same person. In Hillary's case, Director Comey is standing by his argument that he believes that this was primarily for convenience, that she was using multiple devices, multiple servers for convenience's sake. I know that not everybody believes that. I'm not sure that I believe it, but I think the chief harm of this is political, Hillary lucked out in having the Republicans overreach, and they will continue to overreach on this. And the other thing that she's lucky about in this situation is that she's running against Donald Trump. That when you're running against a candidate like that, where there are so many legitimate, valid concerns about what he might do with classified information or really anything else related to government information, I don't think that she's going to suffer too much from it.
Yeah. Oh, you're laughing, Steve?
Oh, Tony's absolutely right. When you consider, do you think Donald Trump, who doesn't appear to believe that rules apply to him and that laws apply to him, you would be concerned about how he would handle national security issues? If this were on TV, I'd try to do a William Shatner shocked face at this point. And he's absolutely right. It is the problem for Republicans is less about what Tony thinks and others think is overreach than the fact that, but here's your, this maniac is your alternative, Donald Trump. And, I don't think that Trump is going to gain really very many votes as a result of this, because people look at him and say, I don't know if he's a loose cannon. He's like an entire loose collection of big armaments on a battleship. And the comparison between the two, Trump is going to lose.
Yeah. So how confident, Tony, first, are you that the FBI conducted this investigation on the level, or do you think the agency gave her special treatment because she's a Clinton?
I have to say that listening to FBI Director Comey, who was originally appointed to government service by, I believe, the first George Bush or George W. Bush, I'm not sure which one, and then was put in the FBI Director position by President Obama. In both his individual statement the other day and then his hearing before Congress, he just struck me as a very credible person with a lot of integrity. So I would have a hard time believing that he coordinated anything politically or with the Democrats. Mm. It seemed like a thorough job. And again, I can't believe that the Clinton campaign are happy having the director of the FBI call their nominee extremely careless with classified information. I mean, that is going to play in a lot of TV, radio, and print ads over the next few months.
And briefly, Steve, as we have break time again, your thoughts on, Trump said the system's rigged and this was a foregone conclusion. Do you think so or not?
Well, isn't the system always rigged when it comes to the Clintons? I mean, go back to, Whitewater and whatever was taking place before Bill got elected in 1992. That meeting, if you believe that this investigation wasn't rigged, then what is your explanation for the meeting between Attorney General Loretta Lynch and Bill Clinton before this announcement took place? I mean, you cannot possibly be cynical enough about how the Clintons operate. And I absolutely believe that this was not an on-the-level investigation.
We'll take our break, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about some other news from the campaign trail, including the news that Bernie Sanders is getting ready to endorse Hillary Clinton. And we'll talk about Governor Scott Walker accepting a speaking spot at the GOP convention and more. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Tony Palmieri and Steve Prestigard. This is The Week in Review on the Ideas Network. You're listening to The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Steve Prestigard, a journalist and blogger, and Tony Palmieri, a communications professor at UW Oshkosh, about the top stories in state and national politics. On the campaign trail, Hillary Clinton had a visit lined up to New Hampshire this week. It will be her first stop since Bernie Sanders beat her there in the February primary. It's been reported that Clinton and Sanders may be cooking up a joint appearance in New Hampshire. Sanders has not yet endorsed Clinton since the primaries ended a few weeks ago, but now reports have it that he is set to endorse her on Tuesday. Tony Palmieri, is it time for Sanders to publicly endorse Hillary Clinton?
He probably thinks it is. Apparently, he was booed in a meeting with a Democratic congressman the other day who were frustrated that he still hadn't endorsed her. I think after the FBI statement, I think there are a growing number of Sanders supporters that are going with Jill Stein of the Green Party or Gary Johnson of the Libertarians. Bernie has said he wants to do whatever he can to defeat Trump, which apparently for him means doing what he can to support Hillary from her on a couple of issues, especially free college tuition and things like that. So I suspect he will endorse her. It probably won't be as strong of an endorsement people would like, but he will do it. And it remains to be seen if his supporters actually do go on board for Hillary.
More on that later. But, Steve, what's your reaction to Bernie Sanders about to endorse Hillary Clinton?
Well, I'll tell you something just popped in my head. Remember the 1980 Democratic Convention when, after Jimmy Carter, the president at the time, remember, he essentially barely beat Ted Kennedy, and Ted Kennedy at the very end of the convention made this kind of token appearance out there at the very end of the last day of the convention, and, you know, that was supposed to be sort of kind of an endorsement. I think that if Bernie does do this, and I suspect he will do this, it really calls into question, why did he run for president in the first place? And if he was really serious about what he was running for, then, number one, he shouldn't have run as a Democrat. He should have run as a third party. And, by the way, I think Donald Trump should have run third party all of this time also. And, you know, if you are an opponent of the political establishment, well, Hillary Clinton is absolutely the political establishment. So if you're a Bernie Sanders supporter, and, you know, now he's going to endorse Hillary Clinton, I would feel a little cheated, I think, if I was a Sanders supporter. The fix has been in, obviously, since last year about all of this, that you know, Hillary was going to be the nominee all along. And I think it's, frankly, a sham if he does do what he is probably going to do in endorsing Hillary.
Well, let's see what our listeners think. Any Bernie Sanders supporters out there? What do you think of Bernie Sanders reportedly getting ready to endorse Hillary Clinton? Will you support Hillary Clinton if you were a Bernie Sanders supporter? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Tony, you referenced it earlier. Hillary Clinton did take a page out of the Sanders policy playbook this week and proposed eliminating college tuition for most families. This plan would apply to families making less than $125,000, and it would be phased in over 5 years. Those making less than $85,000 could attend an in-state college or university for free right away. She also, in any case, without going into all the details, do you think this is a good plan, Tony Palmieri? And maybe this is the Bernie Sanders pressure brought her further to the left.
I think it is a good plan. I graduated from St. John's University in 1983 debt-free because there was that much money available in grants and scholarship and what have you. My students today at UW Oshkosh on average graduate around $25,000 or $30,000 in debt, which is actually considered to be reasonable compared to many other places and states. It's long past time to give help to young people or all people who want to get their college degree. We all benefit from that by having an educated society, especially in this information age. Her plan, like Sanders' plan, would require cooperation from the states, and that's going to be the difficult part when you've got a Scott Walker and a Republican legislature in Wisconsin that would actively try to block something like this. The voters in Wisconsin would have to step up and make sure that there's a government here that would allow a plan like this to take place, at least in our state.
Yeah. What do you think of this plan, Steve?
Well, there's, you know, you said you didn't want to get into the details, which is fine, but there is one extraordinarily important detail, which is how is this going to be paid for? You know, this is a country that is $20 trillion in debt, and now we're going to throw out another entitlement out there. And that's my question. How are you going to pay for this?
Yeah, well, if it's a tax on the rich, is that going to be the way to do it?
That's part of it, all right? And, you know, as Jill Stein of the Green Party has said, and I think that Bernie agrees with this, we bailed out those banks, and we've bailed out other big interests in this country. It's time to start doing something for the average, everyday citizen families who pay the bills in this country. If we have the will to do it, we can find a way to structure our tax code so that it can be done. And we have to just eliminate the special interest influence peddling in our government where the banks and others that supported getting people deeply in debt had so much excessive influence in state capitals in Washington over the years. We need to end that.
We have some comments on Facebook. Brandy on Facebook writes, I'm thankful the Democratic race wasn't as hateful or as immature as the Republican race, and I'm proud to say they can come together like this. And Katie on Facebook, though, writes, a Sanders endorsement in no way erases her past. There is no way I will ever vote for Hillary Clinton. Very briefly, wrapping up this part, Tony, you mentioned earlier that you weren't sure all of Bernie Sanders' supporters would end up supporting Hillary Clinton. What do you think is going to happen?
I think eventually the prospect of a President Trump will so terrify most of those folks that they will ultimately vote for Hillary Clinton. I mean, let's face it, presidential elections in this country are almost always battles of the lesser evil. And at some point, I believe the majority of Bernie's people will say, you know what, I'm not that convinced about her. She's not as trustworthy as I'd like. Maybe she's too moderate or what have you. But they'll say, do I really want to help create the possibility of a President Trump? And I think they'll get on board.
Well, let's talk about the Republican side, too. Governor Walker endorsed Donald Trump this week, sort of. He took to Twitter on Wednesday to say, last August, I said I'd support the GOP nominee. Now it is time. It is now clear who the RNC delegates will vote to nominate. He is better than she is. So he did not mention Trump by name. He's going to support him. just last month, Walker said he was holding out to officially back Trump until he took back comments that Trump made about a Hispanic judge, which has not happened. So, Steve, how do you read this? Why is Walker reluctantly getting on board the Trump train?
Well, you know, he probably sees what he believes, and I'm not saying he's not correct, that Trump is going to be the nominee. I certainly hope that there is a way to allow the delegates to actually vote their conscience and not be tied to their state results. From what I read, state laws like in Wisconsin that require the delegates to go by their congressional district winner are not enforceable at the federal level. And there may be, you know, if you want to see a really interesting convention, there may be a vote on freeing all of the delegates at the beginning of the convention, and the Trump people are trying to prevent that from happening, obviously. I think he made a mistake. And the reason that Walker made a mistake is because there is one specific position that Donald Trump has. He's kind of gone against at least three decades of Republican support of free trade. And frankly, he's gone against, the mainstream of the Democratic Party has been more or less in favor of free trade. There is nobody in this state who knows something about Wisconsin's economy that doesn't believe that what Trump says he wants to do would be disastrous to this state. Wisconsin's agricultural economy, which is one-third approximately of the economy in this state, is tied to exports. And what Trump thinks he's going to do, which is, to stop, foreign stuff from coming in, is going to have the result of stopping Wisconsin farmers and Wisconsin egg processors from being able to sell products overseas. It would be an absolute disaster if this country changed its free trade policy as far as agriculture goes. That's what Trump favors, and I can't believe that's what Walker supports.
Yeah. Walker will speak at the Republican convention in Cleveland later this month and acknowledged he is now rejecting the idea that Trump could be replaced as the nominee. Walker will reportedly focus on Clinton in his speech and leave the Trump criticisms behind. Tony, what's your reaction to Walker being offered and accepting a speaking role at the convention?
My guess is that Reince Priebus, who's the chair of the RNC, said to Walker, look, if we're going to give you a primetime speaking slot at the convention, you have to endorse this guy. But he is better than she is hardly what I'd call the most ringing endorsement out there. But apparently Scott Walker is in Trump's list of top 10 possible VP candidates, although I don't expect that would change Trump's position on trade. It sounds like Steve is saying that Wisconsin Republicans should probably support Hillary Clinton.
Is that what you're saying, Steve?
Is that what you're saying, Steve?
I am absolutely not saying that. I'm saying that Wisconsin Republicans should support an actual Republican, and Donald Trump is not an actual Republican. So, remember, Ted Cruz won this state, not Donald Trump. And I think that Wisconsin delegates should be leading the revolt against Trump at the convention. That would be what I think they ought to do, show some leadership.
We're almost out of time, but Walker is reportedly one of the 10 people being considered by Trump to be his running mate. He even singled out Walker for praise, saying, I have a very good relationship with him. So, Steve, what about Vice President Scott Walker?
Well, the first thing is, no, it's not going to happen. The second thing is, apparently his daughter is now the leading vice presidential candidate, which I have a hard time believing that's going to happen. Newt Gingrich, he's a great conservative mind, but you put a Trump Gingrich ticket up there and it looks like crabby old men, or a grumpy old men, I should say, from that movie from a number of years ago.
Yeah, we'll end.
But it's not going to be Walker.
Yeah, well, we have less than a minute to go. We'll end on a lighter note. For the first time in a decade, you can now buy Jolly Good soda at some limited retail locations in the eastern part of the state, in the Sheboygan area. But the company announced it's going to expand statewide. Do you remember Jolly Good soda, Steve Prestigard, and do you have a favorite flavor?
I didn't really drink it all that much, although Sour Power, I'm pretty sure I did. I'm kind of more of a cola person myself, but it's great that micro food processing is able to take place, isn't it?
Yeah. Are you a Jolly Good soda or pop fan, Tony?
No, not really. I'm sure I had Jolly Good at some point in the 90s, but I cannot remember what flavor or what.
Well, it's been Jolly Good.
Good to have it back.
It's been Jolly Good to have you both on. Thank you both very much for being with us. Tony Palmieri is a communications professor at UW Oshkosh and a media columnist to the Fox Valley Scene. And Steve Prestigard is a journalist and blogger at steveprestigard.com. Coming up in our state capitol report, we will talk about possible Democratic gubernatorial challengers to Governor Walker. That'll be our state capitol report after 7. And Monday at this time, it's the July edition of Mondays with Mike. We'll talk about the latest on WPR programming and more with WPR Director Mike Crane. Thank you to producers Bill Martins, Chris Molina, and Kai Brito. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.